Morning, everybody.
Hi, Jax.
Hi, Conrad. I have a question for you this morning. Who or what is dictating your pace? Who or what is dictating your internal pace? So in the 90s and early 2000s, the way we did missions as relating churches is we would gather together all of those enthusiastic people who wanted to go on mission trips, and we would pile into a Toyota Condor, and we would head off to Mozambique or Swaziland, long trip, lots of fun in the car. There was one driver, though, that would not drive above 100 kilometers per hour the whole way. How would you have liked to be in his car? Inside of us, there's something in a lot of us where it's like, that just makes us anxious to feel like he's going at the wrong pace. And I'm wondering, what is that drive? What is that thing inside of us that says, it's that pace, you're going at the wrong pace? He says he likes to go at 100 kilometers per hour because it makes him feel like he's in control. But for everybody else in the car, it makes them feel like they're going crazy. So who or what is driving your internal pace? If you can imagine yourself stuck in a one-lane road behind someone who's just going slower than you'd like, or maybe you're walking down an escalator and the guy in front of you is not walking. He's just letting the escalator carry him. It's like, come on, dude. What is that frustration? What is that urgency? What is the urgency? If you're not late for anything, what is it that is driving your internal pace? There is a man, Andy Johnson, who writes a book on missions, and he says this: the work of missions is urgent, but it's not frantic. The work of missions is urgent, but it's not frantic. We're starting an unhurried series. How do you like that title? An unhurried series for the next couple of weeks on work and Sabbath and rest. And work is part of it. But today we're going to start off, the first one of the series is on the slow, simple life. The slow, simple life. And we're going to look at our pace and the patterns of our lives. And we're going to ask ourselves, how deeply does the world's assumptions about pace and productivity define what I'm doing and what drives my internal pace? When Jada was a little girl, she really challenged us on this many times, because Jada's internal pace was just slow enough compared to Richard and mine that she would often ask us the very logical question, what are we in a hurry for, Mum? And I would have no answer for her. You're just walking at the wrong pace. I literally don't know. I'm not late for anything, but there's an urgency. There's a hurry within me. And what is it? So it's an interesting thing calling you to a slow, simple life, because some people are already going too slow. Some people need to speed up. It's okay, you can pick up the pace. And some people, and I think the world in general, is going too fast, and so hence the title, The Slow, Simple Life. But you learn when you're doing public speaking that it's very good to peg your voice at a volume of 5 out of 10. Because if my volume is 5 out of 10, then when I really want to make a point, I have range and I've got room to go. And when I really want to draw you in, I've got room to go down. If you peg yourself at an 8 or a 10 and then you get excited and you go a little bit higher, it doesn't do very much. And I think that in our pace in life, we want to peg ourselves at an 8 and then we want to speed up and we just fall over. Or maybe even we peg ourselves at a 2 and... like, where do you go from there? We need to learn how to pace ourselves appropriately and to look at Jesus as our example as we follow him and say, how do we pace ourselves appropriately? So we have room for the immediatelys of God, for the suddenlys of God to move, and we have room to slow down and rest because we're pegged appropriately. So I want to propose that one of the reasons why in general as the world there seems to be an urgency within us is because we're living with an incorrect mindset. We don't know what kind of game we're playing, if I use that analogy. We don't know what kind of, how to view the world accurately. So in the mid-1980s, there was a philosopher and a theologian by the name of Dr. James Cass, and he defined two types of games, the finite game and the infinite game. So a finite game would be something that you participate in where there's a definite win. There's an objective. You know the rules. You know who's playing before the game starts. And you know when it will end and how you can win at the end or how you will lose. An infinite game is a game that does not have predefined rules or a predefined objective. And not even the players are necessarily known from the beginning of the game. Players can join and leave the game. And the game continues. Soccer. Finite game. You know the rules. There's white lines on the field. You know what to do. You know who's playing. And you know what to do in order to win. The objective is very clear. Call of Duty. This is an example for the younger people in the room. Call of Duty, I have been interrogating my teenagers. Don't take that as a sign that I think it's a good idea for you to allow your teenagers to play Call of Duty. This is not that at all. I think it's a terrible idea, but my teenagers play it anyway. I was interrogating them around Call of Duty and saying, what is the purpose of the game? Like, how do you win? They said, well, you can't win. Well, what do you mean? What do you do in the game? You progress through the levels. Okay, so, but what is the point? To play. The point of an infinite game is to play. It's to stay in the game. So I said, well, but how can you lose? So, well, you can't really lose, but you can rage quit, where you throw your phone and you say, I'm done with this, and you walk out. Infinite games are very much like that. That is the way you lose, is by rage quitting an infinite game, giving up, turning to idleness, discontent, frustration, distraction, because you didn't realize, perhaps, that you were playing an infinite game, and when the win never came, you became frustrated. So Simon Sinek speaks on the infinite game from this idea from Dr. James Cass, and he uses the example of the Vietnam War. So in the Vietnam War, the US were doing really well. They won all the major battles. They had far less casualties than the Vietnamese. For all intents and purposes, they were ahead. The war went on year after year, and there was no doubt that the US thought they were winning. But the war never ended. And they burned up resources. And they kept going for the win, which never arrived. Until one day, a historian writes it like this. Historian Shelby Stanton writes this about the last years of the US involvement in the Vietnam War. The American Army's decline was readily apparent in this final stage. Racial incidents, drug abuse, combat disobedience, and crime reflected growing idleness, resentment, and frustrations, the fatal handicaps of a faulty strategy. Idleness, resentment, frustration, getting racist, abusing drugs, being disobedient, just sick and tired of never winning. The U.S. finally realized they were playing with a finite mindset, an infinite game. And they burned through their resources until they had nothing more to give. Life, friends, is an infinite game. What's the win? People join and leave this game all the time, and the win is not clearly defined. How do you win at life? Hashtag winning has tried to become a thing, but what is that? What's the definition? You can get the house, you can get the spouse, and who knows that when you get married, you're on your wedding day, you have not won at marriage. And if you think you have, you're in for a horrible disappointment when you have to wake up the next day and realize there's more to give. It's the same with life. It's the same with accumulating finances. Life is an infinite game, and when we're going for the win, and the win becomes like a mirage in the desert that just never arrives, we can become frustrated. We can become idle and distracted and become busy with the wrong sorts of things. The way you run a 100-meter sprint is very different from the way that you would run if you knew you would be running for the rest of your life. If you picture that car ride that I spoke to you in the beginning, it's very different when you have a destination and that's the win. You want to get to Mozambique or get to Lesotho than if you're on mission and Lesotho and Mozambique are one of many, many stops you're going to be making. If you picture yourself a totally different kind of car ride, trying to put a baby to sleep, doesn't matter if you get stuck behind someone slow and you've got a baby in the car, and the point of the journey is the journey. And so the windows are open and you're breathing in the cool night air and you're just driving. It doesn't matter the pace because the win is the drive. As followers of Jesus, we are not goal-orientated in the greatest sense of the word. We are formation-orientated. If we are goal-orientated, well, then take the shortcut. If you want to win the race and it's a windy road, just go straight. Take the shortcut. But if the point is the journey, then we can't take the shortcut. It's like the silly example of the student speaking to a beach bum, and the beach bum says, "Why are you studying?" And he says, "Because I want to go and get a great job." "And what are you going to do then?" "Well, then I'm going to earn a lot of money." "And what are you going to do then?" "Well, then I'm going to retire." "And what are you going to do then?" "Well, then I'm going to lie on the beach." And the beach bum goes, "Okay." But we are formation orientated. We understand that life is a journey. And yes, in the journey, there are finite games. There are things to accomplish. But overall, we need to have the right mindset of the infinite game that we're a part of. If not, we can become sinfully busy, which I would argue many of us probably are. So when we're looking at this unhurried, the slow, simple life, what I'm not saying, obviously the slow, simple life is not frantic and it's not complex, but it is also not unproductive. It's not easy. It's not idle and lazy. That's not what I'm calling us to. It is having an infinite mindset so that we have a sustainable pace, and it's having a clear purpose so that we can have a minimalist lifestyle. So let's define busy. Got a couple of definitions for busy for you. The first one is the original definition of busy. It's to be engaged in action. You are busy with your business. That's what you're busy with. It's your occupation, such as the example, I'm busy studying. I'm busy working. I'm busy doing my job. That's the first definition of busy. But others that have come in over time is that full of frantic activity, bustling, like a busy shopping center. It's not necessarily going anywhere. It's not producing anything. It's just busy. There's just a lot going on. Another definition is to be foolishly or intrusively active. So that's like meddling. It's a busybody. They're just busy with stuff that is not their business. That kind of busy. And then there is the kind of busy that is distracting detail, like a busy design. It's just a lot. It's just too much. So there's busyness where I'm occupied with something, I'm accomplishing something. There's busy when it's just a lot. So there's a lot going on. It's frantic. There's busy when it's not your business. You're getting busy with what's absolutely got nothing to do with you. And then there's just where there's a lot of detail. It's just too much. So if we're calling you to the slow, simple life, we want to look at slowness in the sense that it is not the pace that is being demanded by the world, that our internal pace is not being defined by a world that says, you're getting left behind, you're not going to win if you don't hurry up. Says who? What's the win? House by when? R1 million in the bank account by when? Job by when? Who's defining that? Spouse by when? Slow when compared to that pace. And then simple in the sense of minimalist focus, knowing what we are busy with, Not being busy, not being busy, not just being busy, but knowing what we are busy with. It's time to turn and look at Jesus. Jesus's life is amazing and fascinating in very, very many ways. Some of the extraordinary God-like ways, but also some of the human and mundane ways. It's really fascinating. Jesus, if you can imagine, never spoke a thoughtless word. He never wasted a moment. He never strayed from being busy with his actual purpose. That's the kind of man that we're following. Jesus was tempted in every way, the Bible tells us, which means he was also tempted to be sinfully busy, and yet he managed to be busy without being sinful. So when we look at the start of Jesus' ministry according to Mark, just Mark chapter 1, and I'm going to speak it through for you a little bit, you'll get an idea of what I mean by this is not slow as an idol. Jesus, it starts off with Jesus went to get baptized, and immediately as he was baptized, the Holy Spirit came on him. And immediately after the Holy Spirit came on him, he was taken into the desert to be prepared. And when he came back, he called his disciples, and immediately they followed him. And then he called another two disciples, and immediately they followed him. So that's four immediately so far, just in this opening. He hasn't got to his first day of work. About halfway through the chapter, he gets to his first day of work. He goes to Capernaum, Mark tells us. And I don't know if this is the first day of his work or just an average day in the life of Jesus, but Mark, who was with him, says this. Jesus came to Capernaum and immediately went into the temple. And when he was in the temple, immediately there was somebody who needed to be healed. And so he healed him and spoke in authority, and a lot of people gathered, and he healed and taught all of them. And then he went home after that day's work to Simon Peter's house and immediately heard that Simon Peter's mother-in-law was sick. And so he healed her, and she got up and started serving them dinner. But then immediately a whole lot of people gathered around, and Jesus prayed for them late into the night. Busy day of work. He's not doing nothing. He's not idle. Very busy. But then, Mark chapter 1 still, verse 35. This is the next morning after that late night and very busy day. And rising very early in the morning, while it was still dark, he departed and went out to a desolate place, and there he prayed. And Simon and those who, that's Simon Peter, whose house they were at, and Simon and those who were with him searched for him, and they found him and said to him, "Everyone is looking for you." And he said to them, "Let us go on to the next towns, that I may preach there also, for that is why I came out." And he went through all Galilee, preaching in their synagogues and casting out demons. He is completely paced by his father, by this moment of retreat, after a really busy day, to find out, what is my business? What should I be busy with? If Jesus had to be deliberate about pacing himself according to his father so that he could carry on, not with busyness, but with being busy, then certainly so do we. Jesus, what is fascinating about him is that though he was the God in human flesh, he was God in human flesh, he understood that he was limited by the fact that he was in human flesh. He understood that because he had taken on human form, he was limited by space and time, and he was limited by his energy, and he was limited by his days, and he understood that limitation, and he worked within it incredibly effectively. Jesus was not under the misguided understanding that he was God's only solution to the world. Jesus knew that God didn't have to work only through Jesus. Jesus didn't wander around going, "But God, if I don't do it today, who will? When?" Jesus said, "I'm at your service, God. I'm limited. I can't do everything. What would you like me to do?" It's ironic, isn't it? We think maybe that, okay, maybe we can win at human life. If I live up to my full potential every day, then surely that is winning at human life. If we're following Jesus, do you think Jesus fulfilled and lived to the limit of his human life? Do you think Jesus could have healed one more person? Do you think he could have stayed up later for one more hour and maybe saved one more person? If Jesus could have and didn't, then that begs the question of how are we pacing ourselves? What is the urgency? Jesus understood that he had come to bring the kingdom of God and that it was an infinite game. And he was serving an infinite God, even though he was finite. He was limited. But the game was not. Bringing the kingdom was not limited. God was not limited. Only he was. And so he had to play appropriately. Because why do we play Call of Duty? To play. We live in order to carry on living tomorrow. We don't live our lives burning through all our resources so that we get to the end of today and that's all we've got. Because that leads to frustration, it leads to burnout, or it leads to idleness, and it leads to discontent, it leads to drug abuse, it leads to racial incidents, it leads to crime, it leads to thinking, I just can't win. I've been trying my whole life, and the win is the mirage in the desert that I can't get to. I'm giving up. I'm rage quitting life. We're limited, friends, and it's okay. It's okay if you don't live into your full potential. It's okay. There are finite games within every infinite game, including Jesus' life. He had to die on the cross. It was defined. There were things that he had to do. But there were other things, such as the bringing of the kingdom, that were infinite. It was going to take, it was undefined the amount of time it would take. God would eventually have to complete the work. But until then, we are to bring the kingdom of God. Missions is urgent, but it's not frantic. So we need to look at our pace and our patterns. Discipleship is an infinite game that will require specific obedience. So be specifically obedient to the call of God, but pace yourself according to the infinite game. How are the world's assumptions and expectations about speed and productivity driving your internal pace? How hurried is your life? Just want to bring you two more scriptures, and then we're going to close with a practice to call you to. Romans 12, verse 2 says this: do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Let God come in and transform your mind and help you to see how to live like Jesus, how to follow Jesus, even when the work is urgent. And then Philippians 4, verse 12 and 13. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation. I can do all this through him who gives me strength. Are we open to being content in any situation? There is more food to find. There is more money to make. There are more people to save. There are more things to accomplish. There are more things to do. But can we change our mind to be content, knowing that God is infinite? The bringing of the kingdom is infinite. Life is an infinite game. And so pace ourselves accordingly, with contentment. So as a faith community here at Anthem, we are committed to growing together, to looking similar in the way we follow Jesus. And so that means that at the end of each of these messages, each week, we're going to be saying together as a community, can we commit to either this private practice that we're going to practice in our lives or this public expression of our faith so that together people can look at us and recognize what God is doing. So today's private practice that I would like to call you to is twofold, in the slow and the simple. When it comes to the slow, I'm going to call you to the practice of changing your mind to an infinite mindset so that you can sustain your pace, so that you can have a sustainable pace. To just keep working on that infinite mindset so that you can be paced accordingly. And then when it comes to simple, we're going to look quickly at that those busyness definitions again. Just do a little, I'm going to call you to do a busyness inventory of your life. When you go home, so you're going to write this down, scribble it on your phone, and do a busyness inventory at home. And ask yourself, how much of my busyness, my activities, the things in my diary, the things that I actually do that aren't in my diary, how much of it is productive and purposeful? It's what God has asked me to do. How much of it is frantic in the sense that I'm just bustling around without purpose? How much of it is meddling? It's actually got nothing to do with me. How much of it is distracting? It's just too much. It might be good, it might be beautiful, but it's just too much. And simplify from our busyness inventory so that we can be busy, productive, hardworking, but yet have a slow, simple life like the Jesus that we follow. I'm going to ask Rich to come up and just close in prayer. Thank you.